Hello, and welcome to the latest recording of Here and Now, the Dawlish and Tynmouth area talking newspaper. Today is Friday, the 9th of February, and we are the Green Team. Hooray! My name is Gwen Whedon, and I'm joined by the other members of our team, Graham, Lynn, Chris, and Mike. Well, we hope we find you well on this damp and fairly dreary day. If you've got the kettle on and a good supply of biscuits, we might as well make a start on our local news items.
Hello, it's Chris here, and I've got the headline from both papers this week. 10 years on, looking back to the February storm of 2014 that obliterated the rail line in Dawlish. Hard to believe that it's now a decade since a powerful storm swept away part of the sea wall and main railway line at Dawlish, severing rail services and leaving some residents homeless. 10 years ago, Dawlish was catapulted into the spotlight after a fierce storm battered the coast, leaving the only railway line into the southwest hanging in mid-air. In what became known as the Great Storm of Dawlish, dozens of residents were left homeless, 80 metres of track was left suspended, and the adjacent Riviera Terrace was cut off and several houses were undermined after ferocious waves washed away the ballast and the road itself. Damage was also caused to the station platform and sections of the coast path. In the decade since, Network Rail has spent £165 million on resilience measures built by Network Rail and funded by the Department for Transport. Many thousands of man-hours have gone into work along the line, and so far the work is proving to be effective at protecting the stretch of track from rising sea levels and extreme weather. Storm Ciarán at the end of 2023 put the new wall, designed to deflect large waves back to the sea, to its most extreme test yet, and it worked. Back in 2014, a further storm on February the 14th caused a breach of temporary sea defences and a line of shipping containers which were brought in to protect what remained. Just 8 weeks after the breach, the line was reopened in time for Easter, thanks to a team of 300 Network Rail engineers, who all became affectionately nicknamed the Orange Army. World-leading experts in coastal, tunnel, cliff and railway engineering have been involved since 2014, and teams working along the coast have had to contend with extreme conditions and come up with some innovative, groundbreaking and world-leading engineering solutions, some of which have never been used before. The 2014 Network Rail response included installing a temporary seawall made from 19 welded shipping containers to prevent further damage, rebuilding and fortifying the breach with more than 6,000 tons of concrete and 150 tons of steel, removing 25,000 tons of collapsed cliff at Woodlands Avenue. The final estimate rose to about 100,000 tons. Tynmouth, following a landslip in March 2014, they were using high-pressure water cannon, fire hoses, helicopter-borne water bombs, and specialist roped access teams and spider excavators. There was the installing of more than 13 miles of new cables, designing and installing a new temporary signalling system, and replacing more than 700 metres of track and ballast, and extensively rebuilding and repairing much of Dawlish station. Network Rail's Capital Delivery Director, Stuart Calvert, said, "The South West Rail Resilient Programme is a really significant piece of work, not just for Network Rail, but for the entire South West Peninsula, which relies on this vital artery to support communities, tourism and economic growth. Since the unforgettable storm of 2014, this stretch of railway has undergone an incredible transformation, which is testament and dedication to our team of engineers and contractors. The new seawall at Dawlish is performing as the design intended, returning the waves to the sea and allowing the railway to recover much more quickly from storms, while the rockfall shelter is preventing material from the cliffs reaching the track. Anne-Marie Morris, MP for Newton Abbott, said, "The South West Rail Resilience Programme is an incredible feat of engineering. Thank you to Network Rail, our very patient community, and the many other unsung supporters of this vital project. We now just have the final phase to complete, which will be the most challenging part of the resilience programme, addressing the challenges of the cliffs at Tynmouth. The government has committed to deliver this fifth and final phase to ensure that the peninsula's most important line is truly resilient." And there are some stunning photographs, one of which is from Steve Bryars, who lives on Riviera Terrace, of the collapsed rail and the destruction that followed, that happened, and the other two are the Network Rail photographs.
Hello, I'm Graham, and my first headline today is "Fewer Harassment Cases Reported to Police." Devon and Cornwall Police received fewer reports of harassment last year, the new figures show, despite a record number being logged across England and Wales. Experts said the rise might be driven by more people coming forward, but low charging rates show victims are being failed by a system that doesn't deliver. The total figure in England and Wales was the highest since comparable records began in 2002-2003, with 271,000 cases of harassment reported by all police forces. Home Office figures show Devon and Cornwall Police dealt with 4,983 harassment cases in the year to September 2023, slightly down from 5,135 the year before. This was equivalent to an average of 14 cases reported every day in Devon and Cornwall, and a more than threefold increase compared to 9 years ago. Katie Kempton, chief executive at the charity Victim Support, said this stark rise in reported harassment could be down to a number of factors. Perpetrators can now harass people online, something we know is becoming even more common. Meanwhile, better public awareness could be leading to more people coming forward. Sadly, the true number of offences will be much higher, given that most victims do not feel able or want to report to the police. Of the harassment records recorded across England and Wales, 9,594 resulted in a charge or summons, or just 3.5%. Devon and Cornwall Police was unable to supply figures due to an implementation of a new IT system. Ms. Kempham added, "Low charging rates are driven in part by police forces often failing to properly recognise cases of stalking and harassment, or mixing up the two distinct crimes."
Hello, Lingam and Bradbury here. My headline is "Railings Petition Reaches 1,000 as Network Rail Deems Extra Safety Measures Too Expensive." More than 1,000 people have signed a petition calling for improved safety measures along Dawlish Seawall following the death of a Ukrainian teenager. 14-year-old Albina Yerkov died after falling from the wall in March last year. Her mother, Inna, and her family friend and Mayor of Dawlish, Councillor Rosie Dawson, who hosted the Ukrainian family when they came to Dawlish in 2022, have been campaigning for better safety, including handrails. An online petition says Albina's family have met representatives from Network Rail. It says Network Rail has so far refused to commit to the railings and the lighting to prevent another death, and state it's too expensive. Network Rail says it's carrying out a risk assessment in the area, but the harsh coastal environment would make handrails difficult to maintain. On the 4th of March 2023, Albina went for a walk to the shops at dusk, and when she did not return, her mother tried calling her numerous times, but she did not answer. She was later found on the beach and died at Royal Devon and Exeter Hospital the next day. Councillor Dawson says Network Rail have been asked to put up railings, and although there have been discussions about lines on the path, there had been one years ago, but this was left to crumble. Councillor Dawson also added there have never been lights along the wall. Neither lights nor lines could have saved Albina from falling. Network Rail has said it was very saddened by Albina's death and that it met her family to express their condolences and to discuss their concerns relating to the sea wall. After the 2014 collapse of the railway line, a risk assessment was carried out. The company said that now the new sea wall has been completed, the risk assessment, another risk assessment is underway to understand if there have been any changes which may affect the level of risk to the area. Handrails along all sections of the seawall would be very difficult to install and maintain, effectively giving them the sea and the environment. They added, all options will be considered as part of the new risk assessment. Devon County Council has the responsibility for the right-of-way along the path, and a council spokesman said funding was agreed in 1994 towards additional signs and a trial use of a white line as a visual aid along the sea wall, especially in the higher sections between Dawlish and Dawlish Warren. However, this white line was soon eroded by the coastal conditions, and a trial has now been subsequently dropped. A full inquest is yet to be heard into Albina's death.
Introducing Walk and Talk. Walk and Talk is a new initiative in Devon and Cornwall asking women aged 18 and over, is there a place you feel unsafe? Take us there. Devon and Cornwall Police will be linking up with women in person to understand more about what our region looks like and feels like, seeking to understand more through the first-hand experience about the places and spaces where women feel unsafe. The Walk and Talk initiative will be trialled for 3 months in selected locations, including Newton Abbot, with each session lasting 30 minutes. Assistant Chief Constable Glenn Mayhew said, "This project is designed to continually improve our understanding of local issues, so we can all work together to make changes." A female police officer will accompany local women as they walk through an area where they have concerns, so we have a detailed understanding of how an area makes people really feel and what the reasons for the cause of these feelings are. It could be caused by poor lighting or because of antisocial behaviour, and we will then share this information with partners to consider how we can work together to support changes and improvements being made. This is an important issue as the personal interaction will develop our understanding of problems from the perspective of women and girls. Police and Crime Commissioner Alison Hernandez said, "All women deserve to feel safe in their communities, but sadly that's not always been the case. It's why tackling violence against women and girls is now a national policing priority."
Tynmouth get the hump as camels inflate score line. And I'll just reassure you that this is a rugby report. The 33-16 score line tells one story about this match, but those who were present at Tynmouth's defeat to Wadebridge Camels had an alternative, more positive view of proceedings. There is no doubt that Wadebridge are a class act in this league, and with 5 tries, they definitely deserve their victory, which keeps them in with a chance of the league title should Sidmouth or Crediton have a bad run in the last few weeks of the season. But the Tins, short of several regulars due to injuries, were by no means overawed, and the margin of their defeat did not reflect the part they played in the match. Indeed, in most areas, Tynmouth acquitted themselves well, especially up front, where the action was brutal at times. As is often the case on the banks of the River Camel, the wind played a big part, and in the first half, the visitors had it in their favour. Unfortunately, despite having plenty of possession and territorial advantage, the Tins came up against an obdurate Cornish defence, which was determined to keep them at arm's length. On the rare occasions when they had the ball, the Camels took full advantage, so that by half-time they had built up a 21-9 lead. Jack Main gave the Tins an early lead with a penalty, but this was wiped out by two converted Wadebridge tries, before Main slotted two more kicks at the Camels' defence and resorted to illegal means to protect their line. At 14-9, the Tins would have felt they were in with a chance, but a third home try on half-time gave them an uphill task after the interval. In the second half, the conditions deteriorated as rain swept down the estuary, and playing into the wind, the Tins were forced onto the back foot. The defence held out bravely for 20 minutes until the home side settled matters with a couple of tries. But there was still time for the visitors to have the last word with a Phelan Lidston try, which Main converted. At the end of the match, head coach Colin Stewart was really pleased with the performance and felt that the scoreline didn't reflect the game. He felt that in the first half, the team played some of their best rugby of the season, and he was especially pleased with the part played by Andy Webber and Jason Jarvis, who were called up at the last minute.
Two councils set their budgets to maintain services. Newton Abbott and Dawlish councils have agreed their budget for the coming financial year and the amount its residents will have to pay to finance its services. Band D households in Newton Abbott are being asked to contribute an extra 61 pence per week to help the town council keep on top of tasks such as street cleaning, running the museum, staging events, including the hugely popular Christmas festivities. This decision was taken in January as part of the authority's legal requirement to set its share of the council tax bill for 2024 to 2025. Meanwhile, Dawlish Town Council decided at its January meeting to approve and adopt its budget. The total budget is £696,944, with its precept set at £616,994. This means a Band D property will now pay £104.95 a year, equating to an additional 71 pence per month for its portion of the council tax bill. Money from the budgets will focus on the community, supporting local organisations, climate change initiatives and infrastructure development. A spokesman said, despite challenges, both town councils are committed to delivering quality services and maintaining financial security.
Homeless pitch up on promenade. Three tents have been erected on Tynmouth seafront. They are understood to be housing homeless people and have been positioned on an area of grass along the promenade. Charity HITS and Teignbridge Council are organising efforts to help those believed to be living in the tents. An outreach team from Teignbridge Council was expected to visit the people where they are. County Councillor and HITS trustee David Cox said, "No one needs to be sleeping in tents. We have emergency temporary accommodation available, and HITS will be going down to the seafront to check on them. This is not a safe place to be, as it is exposed and open to the elements." And there's a photograph of the three tents just past the ice cream cone parlour.
Police slam shocking 99 miles per hour speed in 30 zone. Speeds of more than 99 miles per hour have been recorded in a Newton Abbott street where the limit is 30 miles an hour. The shocking figures were detected in St Mary Church Road, captured on portable equipment provided by Newton Abbot Council with a grant from the Police and Crime Commissioner after residents expressed concerns about road safety. It has prompted hope of a new permanent speed camera, meaning those who break the rules there could face hefty fines or driving bans. The VAS, which is Vehicle Activated Speed Signs, were set up in St Mary Church Road between June the 1st to July the 3rd, when more than 20,000 vehicles exceeded 35 miles per hour and 119 drivers topping 60 miles per hour. Between December the 8th to January the 2nd, more than 22,000 drivers ignored the 30 miles per hour limit with speeds of 89.5, 89.37, and 99.25 miles per hour being detected. During a Speedwatch session in Ashburton Road on Sunday, February the 4th, Speed Detention Officer Dave Burrows of Devon and Cornwall Police slammed the behaviour. He said, "It's disgraceful. It's unforgivable. That sort of speed, 100 miles an hour, you're covering nearly 150 feet of road surface per second. I spent the last 30 years dealing with serious and fatal road accidents. I'm an experienced collision investigator, and at that speed, the occupants of a car or anyone else wouldn't stand a chance." The man responsible for much of Newton Abbott's Speedwatch activity is former Mayor Councillor Mike Joyce. He and his volunteers have spent several years supporting the police. 99 miles an hour in a 30 zone, that is frightening, he said. It scares me to death to think someone could be doing that speed. But the results of all the statistics we've sent to the police is that county highways have said they're going to recommence installing a static camera there. There's no need for this if people abided by speed limits. They're there for a reason. I still don't understand why people don't get that. But it's good news that our efforts are being rewarded and the problem taken seriously. We look forward to more success stories elsewhere in towns such as Ashburton Road and Torquay Road, where residents have also expressed concerns.
World War II Anzo campaign veteran dies at the age of 100. A Royal Marine commando who survived bloody Second World War battles in Italy has died at the age of 100. Fred Ames celebrated his 100th birthday in July last year, saying at the time, "I'm a survivor." During World War II, Fred and his comrades were surrounded on three sides by lethal German panzer divisions as the Allies invaded Italy at Anzio and moved up the Italian coast after months of fierce fighting. He was a beach commando, carrying out dangerous landings ahead of the main forces and later saw action in the south of France after D-Day. He modestly said of his war service, "It was no different to anyone else, nothing too exciting. We boarded small motorboats for a night crossing to Palermo in Sicily, where we joined forces with the American Fifth Army. We then moved on to mainland Italy, where I fired my first shots in anger, well, more likely fear, in the Battle of Anzio. The Germans soon brought in panzers and another crack of troops, which made life more difficult. During the Battle of Anzio, 7,000 Allies were killed and 36,000 wounded or missing, with 5,000 Germans killed and 30,500 wounded, 4,500 captured before the Allies broke out and entered Rome. Fred, who joined the Royal Marines as an 18-year-old in 1942, was in Naples Bay to see Vesuvius last erupt in March 1944, as the top of the volcano blew off with a huge cloud of ash thrown several miles into the sky. He then became a military policeman based back in Yettington in Devon, calling it forced labour, before demob and becoming a bus conductor and a driver and a hospital porter. What a life. His son Richard said, "Dad had a very peaceful and short passing. We will be having a funeral in Ede Church, and we shall also have a memorial for my mum, as she died during COVID and could not have a life celebration that she deserves, so they will be together." An Ede villager said Fred was the nicest man ever. He was always smiling and chipper. He was an absolute hero and will be very sadly missed. And there's some wonderful photos accompanying the article of Fred in his wonderful, and he's 18, as an 18-year-old, as a Royal Marine with his uniform.
Devon schools revealed to be in financial deficit. More than a dozen schools in Devon have revealed they are in a deficit at the last academic year, new figures show. It comes as the number of schools losing money across England soared last year. The Association of School and College Leaders said government investment has failed to keep pace with rising costs, warning deficits will harm pupils' education. Schools are required to disclose details of their finances to the Department for Education, and although not all of them do so, meaning an incomplete picture is available. The figures show 13 of the 130 local authority maintained schools in Devon, which did provide information, were in a financial deficit in the 22-23 year, up slightly from 12 the year before. A school is in a financial deficit when it spends more than it earned when factoring in the previous year's balance. This may not be representative of the entire Devon area, given just 35% of local authority-run schools and nurseries provided relevant information. Nationally, there was a significant rise in the number of schools running a negative budget. Julia Harnden, funding specialist at the GCSL, said, "Despite the Prime Minister's promise that his main funding priority in every spending review will be education, schools and colleges, this received barely a mention in the autumn statement. This must be rectified in the spring budget to turn rhetoric into reality." Mr. Paul Whiteman, General Secretary of the School Leaders Union, the National Association of Head Teachers, said, "Schools slipping into a deficit will have cut everything they can possibly can first to maintain a positive budget. Financial difficulties were especially problematic for nurseries, with almost a third in a deficit across England in 22-23. A Department for Education spokesperson said, "School funding is rising to more than £59.6 billion next year, the highest ever level in real terms per pupil. While the vast majority of schools are operating with a surplus, we are providing up to £40 million in 2023-24 to support schools which find themselves in financial difficulties."
Passionate plea for routine prostate cancer screening. A retired police officer from Tunbridge who is living with terminal prostate cancer is calling for more widespread screening for men. Former Sergeant Jim Lewis Clark, 57, says a cheap and simple PSA blood test can detect the disease, and he believes screening should be routine, as it is for women's cancers. He was 47 when he first contacted his GP about the possibility of a cancer check when his brother Jeremy was diagnosed with the disease. Testing on the NHS is usually only carried out on men over 50, but only upon request. While Jim had no symptoms at the time, he was aware that there is an increased risk if a close relative had the disease. He was told he was too young at 47. But had he been tested at the time, the cancer would have been detected much earlier. Jim said, "Prevention is better than cure, but I don't think the awareness is really there. You don't always have symptoms to have the disease. People's lives are being cut short by not being tested. That is the reality. We could do so much better." Jim's account of his illness comes as King Charles has revealed he is being treated for cancer, which was discovered when he underwent a procedure for an enlarged prostate. Jim and his wife Michelle, also a former police officer who is the clerk at Kingstainton Town Council, are now coming to terms with his condition, and he has been writing a blog about his experiences since he was eventually diagnosed in 2016. He explained that the PSA test, prostate-specific antigen, is a very cheap test. He said, "For the sake of such a cheap test, if it is caught early enough, it can be treated. By diagnosing early, this can prevent spread outside the prostate and the formation of tumours. I don't want to sound bitter or angry. I accept there is no more treatment for me." His brother, a journalist with the Spectator magazine, who died last year, had been diagnosed with prostate cancer in 2013. Jim had been due to retire from the police in 2018 when he completed his 30 years service. He went to his GP, but he was told at 47 he was too young. He said, "I had no symptoms, so I wasn't given a blood test. It is only in the last 2 years," Jim said, "the NHS has begun to give blood tests to men aged 50 or over."
Call to join Charity's Daffodil Appeal. Everyone deserves expert care and support at the end of life, and that's why Marie Curie, the UK's leading end-of-life charity, is calling on the residents of Newton Abbot and surrounding areas to support its Great Daffodil Appeal this March by giving up a little of their time to distribute the iconic daffodil pins in exchange for a donation. The charity's flagship fundraiser, supported by headline partner Superdrug, helps raise much-needed funds for Marie Curie nurses and the healthcare professionals to provide expert support and hospice care in the comfort of people's own homes across Devon. Marie Curie is dependent on public donations, and last year supporters helped the charity provide direct care to more than 44,000 people across the UK through overnight nursing care in people's own homes and via its 9 hospices. The money raised also funds the charity's free support line and web chat, which is available to anyone with an illness that they're likely to die from and those close to them. It offers practical and emotional support on everything from symptom management, day-to-day care, and financial information and bereavement support. Georgia Brooks, Marie Curie Community Fundraiser for Devon, said the Great Daffodil Appeal, now in its 38th year, is a brilliant and fun way to join in, give back to our local community here in Devon, whilst also helping us provide a vital service to those in the final chapter of their lives. For more information or to donate, please visit their website, mariecurie.org.uk/daffodil.
And 2 obituaries this week. Betty Margaret Jennings passed away peacefully on the 24th of January at Torbay Hospital, and Betty was in her 88th year. The funeral service will take place at Torquay Crematorium on Monday the 12th of February at 1:30 p.m. Details from Dawlish Funeral Care. Ian Michael Radford peacefully passed away on January the 1st at 9:40 p.m. at Torbay Hospital. His funeral will take place at St. Michael's Church, Tynmouth, on Monday the 19th at 1300. and details of his funeral can be got from J&K Davy, Co-op Funeral Care, Kingstainton. Moving on to upcoming events, Tuesday the 20th of February, Dawlish Community Transport are going to Ensley Garden Centre. Wednesday the 21st of February, Holcombe Garden Society meets at the Village Hall for a talk given by Lorna Hall about Lukesland Gardens. And also on Wednesday the 21st, the Sheldon Over 60s Club invite you for soup, a roll and a dessert, all for the sum of £7. If you're interested in going on the Dawlish Community Transport excursion, the number to ring is 01626 888777.
Brew and banter for Forces veterans. Forces veterans will be able to meet and chat over a cuppa, thanks to a Dawlish couple. Heather and Bob Graham, who already run a successful monthly veterans breakfast club, are hoping their latest Brew and Banter events will catch on in the same way. Held at the Strand Centre, the first event has got off to a good start. Heather explained, "It's a chance for veterans to come along, meet and have a chat. Any veteran who wants to come along and talk with like-minded people is very welcome. This is the kind of space where people can feel comfortable to pop in, and we can signpost anyone who may need some help or where to find it." The new Brew and Banter events will take place on Tuesdays between 10 and noon. The popular breakfast club, which regularly sees between 30 and 40 people attend, gives all veterans, serving and retired, a chance to get together in an informal, social way. It has been going for several years and meets on the second Saturday of the month at the Smugglers Inn, Dawlish.
County councillors could gain a £1,000 hike in basic allowance. Devon's county councillors could be in line for a £1,000 hike in their basic allowances thanks to recommendations of an independent panel. The three-strong panel is suggesting an increase of more than 7%, taking the basic rate to nearly £15,100 from May. The jump from just over £14,000 is being proposed because of the cost of living crisis, a belief that higher remuneration could help attract a more diverse range of councillors, and to reflect the significant workload. The proposed changes will be put to a vote at full council later this month. It was explained the payment is an allowance, not a salary. That is a vital distinction, according to the pay panel's chair, Heather Morgan, who is a tribunal judge, and it means there is no pension entitlement. She told the Authorities Procedures Committee that came as a surprise to some newer members, which is why one of our recommendations is to highlight to people who are exploring the possibility of standing for election what the terms and conditions are. Beyond the basic allowance, some councillors receive special responsibility allowances for chairing committees or holding leadership positions. Leader John Hart's basic allowance will rise to £37,705 if the proposals are accepted. Councillor Hart, who sits on the committee, abstained from the vote to support the recommendations. The panel noted it had consistently recommended rises up until 2017, but these had not been implemented, and so it was pleased its recommendations had been accepted since. The panel had compared Devon's basic allowance to other councils in the South West, and that even after the proposed rise, it would be broadly in line with Wiltshire Council, £15,004, but still behind Cornwall Council, £17,681, Somerset Council, £15,500, and Bristol City Council, £15,169.
Hanging on the line, a look back 10 years ago to when the power of nature devastated the main rail link and line at Dawlish. From filming, flooding to high drama on his own doorstep, cameraman Steve Briers was travelling back to his home in Riviera Terrace when a friend who worked for Network Rail sent him a text. "Batten down the hatches," it said, as forecasters had predicted a double black storm warning. Steve drove back home from filming the then flooded Somerset levels for the BBC's Countryfile programme. Little did he know what was about to unfold literally on his own doorstep. Remembering the night a decade on, Steve said it was a surreal experience. Now, he says, the intervening years have led to positive and negatives for Dawlish. He describes the new sea wall as the Berlin Wall, and that the town has lost some of the finer points of Victorian architecture. But the new wall has provided a new walkway. Of that night, there was an irony for Steve, who spent the hours before he came back to Dawlish filming residents affected by flooding in Somerset. He recalled, "As I drove back, I came across Starcross and Powdram Church, and I thought I'd forgotten where I was. The waves were coming over my windscreen, yet I was only along the estuary. I got home and it was like hell broke loose. It was blowing a hoolie. Most people are down in the town at the viaduct, and I'd gone to have a quick look. But when I got home between 7 p.m. and 8, neighbours began ringing each other asking if the wall was still there. The amount of water hitting the houses on Riviera Terrace was incredible. I thought it was going to take the windows out. I didn't know how much they could take, although they were double glazed. The force of the water was simply incredible." Steve and his other neighbours quickly realised they needed to move their cars to roads higher up. Steve explained you could go about 20 metres, then the car would go down on its springs as a wave hit. Then you had to wait for the wave to go back before you could move another few metres. "We were driving over rubble and ballast by then, and by the time we'd done that, the wall had almost gone, but the road was certainly undermined by then. They all returned to their houses by a set of steps from the Exeter Road, but that was hazardous too, and they had to hold on with both hands to get down safely." Steve recalls the pressure of the wind was blowing you back as they went further down. "As we got to 7A, the house that was eventually undercut, you could see that water was going underneath the house. I don't think people really appreciated how quickly it all happened." Steve remembers many people had gone down into Dawlish town to see the storm, but it was further along that the trouble was really happening at Riviera Terrace. After calling 999 and as the railway line was swinging in the air, Steve had a knock on his door, giving him just 5 minutes to evacuate. He said there was a choice, either be washed away into the sea or be blown up by a gas main which ran under the road in front of the houses. Having grabbed a few belongings, including his passport, his parents' wedding photo and other goods, he and three other residents made a calculated risk to stay. Steve said that had they realised if they left, they would not be able to go back for quite some time. He retreated to his neighbours, who he hardly knew, and they all sat it out through the night, refusing to leave. Steve recalls it was crazy, pitch black and completely surreal. But as daylight broke, I went outside and I saw the reality of what happened. Some incredible photographs that accompanies the article and the tale told by Steve. Obviously the railway line hanging in the air and the sea just washing up by the houses of Riviera Terrace. There's also a picture of David Cameron, who was the Prime Minister at the time, who came down to Dawlish to, well, get a bit of publicity for both the Network Rail and his good self. And I've also got something to say from the former Deputy Mayor, who, because it was the celebration of, well, celebration and commemoration of this event, wanted to have a say too. Former Deputy Mayor praises a wonderful community effort. Councillor Howard Almond was Deputy Mayor at the time of the storm and recalls the wind howling. I thought there might be flooding in the centre of Dawlish, so I thought I'd drive down and see if I could do anything to help. I was Deputy Mayor. I saw the fire engine stopped by the road in Riviera Terrace, and I was stopped by the police. I explained who I was, and they told me there's been a big gas leak. They were evacuating the houses overlooking the railway line and were planning to take people up to the leisure centre. So they said the best thing I could do would be to go up there to see what you could do to help. And I got there just before the manager arrived to unlock everything. I spent the night setting up makeshift beds, making tea, coffee, and making sure everyone was okay. I only found out the extent of the damage to the railway line as the evacuees were brought up to the centre. My thanks to everyone else who helped, the leisure centre staff, police, emergency service, and Sainsbury's staff who brought equipment and food for making breakfast the next morning. It was a wonderful community effort.
Court briefs. A man jailed for offences against railway workers. A Dawlish man has been jailed for offences against two railway station employees. Harry Norman, 34, of Carlton Terrace, had pleaded not guilty to both charges of attacking one man at Dawlish Warrens railway station and at threatening another at Tor station, but he changed his plea to guilty. Both cases were brought by British Transport Police. Magistrates heard that on March 21st, 2023, Norman had punched Neil Dixon, a station employee. For the offence of assault by beating, Norman was sentenced to 5 weeks in prison. The court deemed the offence serious because it was a deliberate attack on a public servant carrying out public duties. It was described as a sustained incident which occurred in front of members of the public, and court has heard the victim impact statement and the serious distress caused to the victim. Norman was ordered to pay compensation of £100. On March the 8th, 2023, Norman had used threatening, abusive, insulting words and behaviour towards Anthony Dooley, an employee at Tor Station, Torquay. Again, Norman changed his plea to guilty. He was sentenced to 9 weeks in prison for that offence to run concurrently, meaning his overall length of imprisonment is 9 weeks. He was further ordered to pay £150 compensation.
Grant fund for village halls reopens. In 2023, a £3 million village halls fund was launched to provide support for the modernisation and improvement of village halls in England. Managed by ACRE, standing for Action with Rural Communities in England, the fund has already awarded over £1 million to rural communities, helping them undertake ambitious improvements to their buildings. Works undertaken or scheduled to take place include new roofs, insulation, extensions, and more energy-efficient heating systems. The grant fund has reopened to new applicants who wish to undertake smaller projects, such as disability access, toilet upgrades, and new kitchens. Grant awards of between £2,000 to £5,000 and up to 20% of eligible project costs are on offer. Project expenditure must take place before the 31st of March 2025. A streamlined online application process and simplified eligibility criteria will make it easier for smaller projects to come forward for support. Deborah Clark, Village Halls Manager at ACRE, said, "We hope the smaller groups on offer will help even more Village Halls management committees make much more needed improvements to their buildings. With increasing energy costs and the cost of living crisis, the need to have warm, welcoming and accessible spaces open to everyone has become even more important in the countryside."
Nominations now sought for Tynmouth Mayor's Award. As in previous years, Tynmouth Town Council's Community Recognition Award nominations have opened. Mayor Councillor Joan Atkins is delighted to launch this year's scheme. In my travels as Mayor, opening events, handing out awards for a variety of organisations, and accepting invitations to visit others to see the work they do, or attending charity fundraisers, I've become increasingly aware of a huge body of unsung heroes in our Town Council, she said. People who volunteer, raise funds or help others with no expectation of reward, and people who support the community with safe, warm spaces in the current climate of rising bills and colder weather. They also offer assistance with form filling, etc. This award is a real opportunity for people to be nominated. They can nominate those they feel so much gratitude to that might otherwise go unnoticed, she said. Nominations will be addressed by the mayor, by the mayor and her deputy, Councillor Kate Williams, and the town clerk in Tynmouth. Those who are successful will be invited with their family and friends to an award ceremony later in March this year. Nominations for the awards close on Sunday, March the 3rd, and forms can be found on the Town Council's website. The form also appears on the back page of Tynmouth Town Council's newsletter, Wavelength.
Thousands of children are homeschooled in Devon. Thousands of Devon children were educated at home in the last academic year, figures show. Data suggests the number of homeschooled children has increased since the coronavirus pandemic across England, although figures are incomplete. Department for Education statistics show around 2,170 children were voluntarily taught at home in Devon in the 22-23 summer term. Across the country, around 97,600 children are homeschooled. Separate figures from the Office of the School Adjudicator suggest there are around 60,500 in March 2019. But it appears COVID is not behind the rise. The largest reason for children being withdrawn from schools was for philosophical reasons, of which 15,800 parents had chosen to do so. In Devon, most commonly, parents opted to homeschool their children for mental health reasons, with around 570 children doing so. The reason for homeschooling were not known in 27% of the cases. Jeff Barton, General Secretary of the Association of School and College Leaders, said home education is a big undertaking and parents should think very carefully before taking their child out of school. He said schools were very robust policies on bullying and take the safeguarding of pupils extremely seriously and encourage parents to work through issues with the school.
An exhibition of a renowned Dartmoor photographer's work documenting life on the vast moorland proved a popular attraction. Photographer and author Chris Chapman has an archive of Dartmoor photographs spanning the past 50 years, many of which were on display at Newton's Place for a recent exhibition. The exhibition, which was made possible thanks to Art Society Tinbridge, brought the bygone life of Dartmoor centre stage for all to see. It also included photographs taken by local schoolchildren, who drew inspiration from Chris's work to create their own take on his style. Also, Chris gave an illustrated talk to a packed audience about his collection. And if I can just give a little personal note here, many years ago I lived very, very near to Chris Chapman on the edge of Dartmoor and had the fortune of seeing many of his photographs. And what I've just read earlier, he brought the bygone life of Dartmoor centre stage. And I was very, very fortunate in experiencing that.
Check for Medi Chopper Charity. A check for over £16,000 was presented to Devon Air Ambulance by a team of its dedicated volunteers. Thank you all so much for supporting us for another wonderful year, a spokesman for Devon Air Ambulance said. Led by Kelly Heyman-Bruce, to date the team have raised more than £29,000 for the charity. Kelly and her team raise the money through various means, not least by bingo nights, which are hosted at High Week Primary School. Kelly and the team would like to express special thanks to the school's caretaker, Chris. There's a lovely photo of the team in all their red T-shirts with the helicopter emblazoned on them, and the total amount that they raised was £16,262.39.
This is Nature Diary by Mike Hitch. Birds mull weather to weather the weather or head south. Although many of our resident birds don't venture far from home, a lot of others are certainly more ambitious, whether they are travelling long distances on migration or just trying to avoid the worst of the weather. Whereas our summer visitors might try to return every year, come what may, to nest in the same place, our winter visitors are more particular, deciding to start with whether coming here is actually worthwhile at all, and then searching out the best spots for food and for comfort. Their journey south is not driven by their need to reproduce. This year, many of our winter visitors were late to arrive. It wasn't cold enough to bother coming this far south, and storms blowing in off the Atlantic are a great deterrent if you're trying to fly southwest. Many are now here, but just how many is a different matter. For example, we know that the number of Berwick swans travelling to Slimbridge has become much more reduced over recent years. And I think that should be Berwick swans, not Berwick swans. Those that have arrived are doing their best to avoid the worst of the weather. Strong winds are not something they enjoy, especially cold winds from the east. When we counted our section of the Kingsbridge estuary in January, the western shore of the Rea opposite us was almost devoid of water birds. The waders had chosen to huddle on the eastern bank, close to where we were standing. The Brent geese and widgeon had chosen to go further along on the opposite side of the Rea towards Kingsbridge. So we had an excellent view of large numbers of waders, dunlin, redshank, oyster catchers, and particularly a group of black-tailed godwits. The surface of the water was empty apart from a pair of great crested grebe, and we were worried that the red-breasted mergenisers still hadn't returned, but they were hidden around the corner at the top of Charlton Bay. Nearer to Salcombe, two great northern divers were fishing. Hardy fellows. To ensure we keep our fish-eating visitors, such as the mergenisers and the divers in winter, and the osprey in spring and autumn, we really must preserve the fish population of the estuary. Since we returned home to Slapton from Costa Rica, we seem to have had nothing but wind or rain, freezing cold, and now back to wind and rain. So it has been difficult for me to get a good feel for the state of our current bird population. The birds on Slapton Lay are certainly hiding from the wind. The duckery at Tor Cross has become a very popular shelter for a number of species of water bird. As well as a normal mallard, moorhen, coots, black-headed and occasional Mediterranean gulls, there is now habitually quite a large group of cormorants sitting on the ledge close to the water, whilst a family of mute swans has taken up almost permanent residence in the shelter of the wall next to the road. Many other birds have simply taken up a position on the water close to the back slope, making them very difficult to see through the reeds, which is quite frustrating. Probably the biggest number of birds have taken up residence in Island Bay. Just how far they retreat into its furthest corner, and even the reeds, depends how hard the wind is blowing. And the birds also keep moving about all round the area, seeking the perfect haven. And there's a couple of photographs of Tor Cross duckery showing swans and ducks and a big bunch of cormorants.
Charity benefits from Royal Oak support. Landlords at an Exminster pub have been raising money to support a local charity. Mel Bowden and Scott Reddin, who run the Royal Oak Pub, have been steadily organising fundraising events in support of West Bank Community Health and Care. Their total has now reached £2,525, thanks to support from the community. Staff at the pub partner with West Bank through 2023, and in December 2022 and 23, Scott and Mel hosted three-course festive lunches to the value of £1,100 for 50 of the charity's clients. They also organise fundraising activities, including a raffle, a donation bucket, and the sale of star decorations on the pub's Christmas tree, bringing in £325 to enable the charity to help more people lead happier, healthier lives and maintain their independence for longer. Mel, who worked in mental health before taking on the pub, wanted to support a charity that helps the local community. She said, "Providing a free lunch and welcoming local people into our pub is a way for us to give back to the community and those who most need extra support. A pub is a vital part of a community. We have many customers who live alone and come in regularly just for the company. Many find walking into a pub alone a daunting experience. By hosting our annual loneliness lunch, we hope to encourage people to return, knowing that we are a friendly bunch and we all are always here for a chat and to lend a friendly ear." Katie Elliott, West Bank's head of fundraising and marketing, said, "We would like to thank the whole team at Royal Oak for supporting us throughout 2023, culminating in a wonderful festive meal at the pub just before Christmas. They pulled out all the stops to lay on a delicious meal with all the trimmings for our local clients, many of whom live alone and find it difficult to get out and about on their own. Their support has been terrific." And there is a rather small photograph here, but it's the two landlords, Mel Bowden and Scott Redding, look very, very happy with their pub in the background.
Artist Alistair helps Starcross youngsters' work come to life. Budding artists at Starcross Primary School were given a helping hand by a professional artist. The youngsters had the chance to take part in a workshop run by local artist Alistair Lambert. The event was made possible thanks to a subsidy from a partnership between the Helen Foundation and DAISY, the arts education charity, working with schools across Devon. The Razor Bills class worked with Alistair creating a work of the ex-estuary birds their classes are named after. The children took their work from 2D collages to 3D dioramas, using some complex techniques and learning how to make their work stand out. Alistair took the class through each stage of the process to show them the skills they needed to be able to make their designs come to life. Card, paper, tape and glue were used to produce the designs. A school spokesman said, regardless of need or barrier, the children were very able to produce a design that they were very proud of. This was a fantastic opportunity. The students had a fantastic day and a great time working with Alistair. We're very grateful to all the people that made it possible. Starcross will proudly display the children's work outside the classrooms for the whole school to enjoy. DAISY is an arts education charity working to develop quality arts engagement opportunities for the children and the young people. And there's two lovely photographs of the groups of children who've made two wonderful 3D collages of birds. And they think they're going to be thrilling the children in the classrooms for a good time to come.
And that brings us to the end of our recording for this week. As always, if you have any comments or suggestions, you can contact us on 07376 147 374. Your readers this week were Lynn, Graham and Chris. Our producer is Mike, and the copying and dispatching is a team effort. So, from all of us here in the studio, until next time, it's
goodbye.